Hi, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez. This is Direct Impact, and this is what we're going to be talking about. Those are civilians in Rafah being, according to press reports, burned alive. And you know what's worse when you watch that and when we're going to be talking about it? The fact that most of them were trapped there. They had no place else to go. I'm Rick Sanchez. This is Direct Impact. Let's do it. Okay, here we go. We're going to begin the show with one of the most barbaric acts the world has witnessed in some time, which, it must be said, follows months of other barbaric acts. There is an international global outcry right now against Israel after the Israeli government of Bibi Netanyahu has just attacked and, again, burned alive, according to press reports, more than 40 people, 46 at last count. That number could obviously change. It could grow. It included children who were trapped like animals in a refugee camp in Rafah. Let's take a look at some of these pictures. As we look at this, we're thinking that many of those people were in tents. And again, they had no place to go because they had been told to go there because other parts of Rafah would probably be attacked. So they were stuck, in essence, and they couldn't move when all of a sudden they got hit with missile strikes. It came after the UN and the ICC, the International Criminal Court, had essentially said that Israel must cease what it's doing, must stop the attacks on Rafah, and accused them as well, as we know, because we've seen a lot of these reports already, that they were in fact being accused of a genocide. And yet, with on the heels of that, right after that report came out, right after that warning came out, this happened. By the way, Israel is essentially saying, oops, didn't mean it, again. The U.S. says they're angry, but they're not going to be doing anything about it. The U.S., that is, not the U.N. The U.N. is investigating. And as we look at this, we can't help but try and figure out how Israel will react, what eventually the world will do about this. Let me bring Manila in to talk about this a little bit. Manila, your reaction to some of this video as it came in over the weekend.
I mean, Rick, what else can we say but heartbreaking? I personally am the child of refugees during the secret war in Laos, during the Vietnam War, the Greater Vietnam War. And I can tell you from my family's experience and what they've told me about refugee camps, it's a controlled area. And if this is an official refugee camp, as they purport it to be, these people are, in fact, trapped. There's a perimeter that's set around, and this was supposed to be the safe zone. We already know from a week, 2 weeks ago, when the incursion into Rafah first transpired, Joe Biden, you know, did a very soft slap of the wrist onto Bibi Netanyahu and said, we're gonna halt, we're gonna time out the shipments we were gonna send you because you shouldn't have gone into Rafah. But here we are again with more additional bombardment shipments sent to Bibi.
Yeah, and look, we have heard time and time again after incidents like this one, and there have been a plenty. Oh, yes, there may have been a mistake. We will investigate. We'll get to the bottom of it. You know, after a while, you can't keep the fox in charge of the hen house. You have to do an investigation outside of he who is being accused of whatever it is he or she is being accused of. And that's so obviously the case here. And yet, when the ICC or the United Nations steps in and says, what you're doing is wrong and we want to hold you accountable, then the U.S., our country, steps in and says, no, leave them alone. You have no right to criticize them. You have a right to criticize Russia, but you can't criticize them. And that, look, that's essentially what's going on here. Coming up later in the show, I have a guest coming on who's going to talk to us about how that dynamic that I just described might soon be changing. And that's important. By the way, here's another story, Manila, for you and I to talk about on this day. There was a time in the U.S. when our leaders in the U.S. position themselves as the torch carriers, right, of democracy, of dignity, both how they dealt with other world leaders, how they engaged among themselves, even when they disagreed, right? Well, today that's no longer the case. I want you to see this. This is a piece of video that just recently happened. This is from the U.S. Congress. Here it is.
Do you know what we're here for? You know we're here about AG.
I don't think you know what you're here for.
Well, you're the one talking about. I
think your fake eyelashes are messing up.
No, ain't nothing.
Right. Hold on.
Order,
Mr. Chairman.
That's beneath even
order of your committee.
Order.
I'm just curious, just to better understand your ruling. If someone on this committee then starts talking about somebody's bleach blonde, bad built, butch body, that would not be engaging in personalities, correct?
A what now?
Chairman, I make a motion to strike those words.
I don't think that's
Hold
a
on.
Part
I'm
of it.
I'm trying to find clarification on what quality.
Chairman,
I
motion to
I
strike
had no
those
idea
words.
What you just said.
This is the U.S. Congress. They're talking about body parts. It looks like a talk show, you know, something we used to watch on TV. How do we go around the world telling others how to follow us and to act like us? Because, you know, how have we gotten to this place? I mean, I have my thoughts on that, but Manila, what do you think? How do we get to this place? This is ridiculous.
Well, Rick, I got to say, at least the veil is off. The veneer of this American superior form of government is off, right? But I think people that have followed this show or any show on RT, for example, has known for a long time that the United States has, this is the least of their concerns, is mudslinging on the House floor. Although I find it hilarious, unbecoming, but still hilarious, I think the U.S. has led by example, if you want to call it that, the world in bombing and starting wars all around the world. So if anything, we should be ashamed of that rather than these women mudslinging like on Jerry Springer.
If the media doesn't treat what they do seriously, which they don't, if the politicians themselves don't treat the actions of our country seriously, which they don't, then we're left to this. This is a sideshow. This is for the benefit of Fox News and CNN and TikTok and so, you know, all the other social. This is what they need to do now to even remain viable, because it no longer seems to me that it has anything to do with governing or making the United States a better place for the rest of us who live here to live. That's kind of how I see how this thing has gotten to where it is, and I don't see it getting any better. By the way, because I grew up here in the U.S., I never focused on Europe for the most part growing up. The EU, I didn't know what the heck the EU was, or the depth of some of the archaic thinking when it comes to the rest of the world. In fact, I always thought Europeans were more advanced than the rest of us, right? You know what, Manila? I was wrong. You know, I'm now realizing the EU is both more provincial in many ways, maybe even more prejudiced than the United States. Case in point, this story, which has been breaking in the last week, where the EU is banning anyone from expressing or even hearing any points of view that are Russian. Like, you're not allowed to express Russian points of view in Europe. What? Talk about thought police. Here's what I'm talking about. The EU has been imposing new sanctions against Russian news outlets. It's a sweeping ban on disseminating all types of content that comes from Russia. The restrictions are also going to affect, by the way, Manila, not only TV channels, but also websites. However, they did specify that Russian journalists are still allowed to work in the EU, still allowed to work in Europe, as long as they agree with the EU. here's how one Italian journalist called the ban. Ready? He says, these measures aim to stop any flow of information which contradicts the party line of the EU leadership and its member states. Freedom of speech, he questions. Well, not to the extent of allowing people to read Russian sites and watch their TV channels. He goes on to say, this is a total dictatorship, an infringement of freedom on speech and information in general. This is completely medieval. They are shooting themselves in the foot with decisions like this, destroying the foundations of the European Union. What do you think of what he says right there? They are shooting themselves in the foot. Is he right?
I couldn't agree more. First, I'd like to point out, though, that, Rick, I think what the European Union or many European states, like look at Germany, for example, they outright banned RT Deutsche almost at its inception,
yeah,
because they were already working towards this anti-Russia hysteria from the get-go. And the reason they're able to do that across Europe is, especially within the European Union, is that they jointly don't have something similar to what we have here, which is a constitution. The UK, same thing. They don't have a constitution with constitutional First Amendment rights of speech. The US would love to do the same thing, except we have that darn constitution, Rick, over there, not so much. So they can kind of control the narrative in the way that they see fit. And the way they see fit is kick out Russia.
I agree. And here's what I think, okay? You disagree with Russia, fine. I'm sure Russia does all kinds of stupid, screwy stuff, just like every government does. Disagree with them, raise an argument, beat them by making a different point, which perhaps has more validity than their point. But just to say you're not allowed to hear their point, you're not allowed to play any leaders from Russia and what they have to say, you're not allowed to hear what the media says, you know what, that's not playing fair. That's not saying I'm going to beat you with facts and with my argument. It means you're not allowed to listen to them, which then should make any citizen think, oh, so why should I listen to you then? And how do I know what you're telling me is right? Right? I
mean, this is beyond Orwellian. We are now in Ray Bradbury's Fahrenheit 451. You can't burn the books anymore. You just ban the website.
Yeah.
It's even easier now to do.
When we come back, thank you, Manila. I'm going to be joined, as I said a little while ago, by introducing you to a global scholar who recently wrote that, quote, Israel has never been criticized so harshly and it will cost them dearly. Those are his words. Those are the words of Dr. Hassan Unal, who's going to be joining me right here next. Don't go away.
What is Bharat? Is it a travel ad? Is it a Bollywood poster? Is it the deepest yoga center in the world? Or is it something deeper, more complex, multifaceted? Let's talk without cliches. Let's talk Bharat. After the end of World War II, the National Liberation Movement in Vietnam intensified dramatically. Having driven away the Japanese occupiers, the Vietnamese patriots by no means wanted the return of the former French colonizers. But France did not want to lose the rich colony and decided to beat the opposition by force. In December 1946, a full-scale war broke out. The Viet Minh Patriotic Organization, led by Ho Chi Minh, inflicted heavy losses on the French. The invaders were enraged. According to Western historians, up to 250,000 lives of peaceful Vietnamese were on their conscience. The colonialists widely used the practice of mass rape of Vietnamese women as revenge on the guerrillas. In 1947, the French destroyed the village of Mai Trac, murdering 170 women and 157 children. However, terror did not help. In 1954, the Vietnamese defeated the French army in the decisive Battle of Dien Bien Phu. Almost 12,000 French soldiers and officers, including the commander, General de Castries, and his command staff were captured. The capitulation of a huge garrison had a demoralizing effect in Europe. The French left Vietnam, but they were replaced by even more violent and much stronger invaders, the Americans. Hard times were awaiting Vietnam again.
All right, welcome back. I'm Rick Sanchez, fired up as usual. All right, let me show you what Dr. Hassan Unal wrote recently. He's my guest. He wrote this on Twitter. He says, since its establishment, Israel has never been criticized so harshly in the Western world and international institutions. This genocidal ethnic cleansing will cost Israel deeply. Those are the words of Dr. Hassan Unal. He wrote that, and he joins us now live. Dr. Hassan, thank you so much for joining us, sir.
Well, that's my pleasure. Thank you.
It's interesting. When I read that, I thought to myself, I'm glad I'm not the only one in the world thinking this. I'm glad I'm not the only one thinking that what Israel is doing is going to hurt all my friends who are Jewish, no matter where they live in the world, because people will take out on them what Netanyahu's government is doing to other people. It certainly doesn't help my country. I live in the United States. I think it's causing all kinds of harm to this country as well. And I also think that for decades to come, people will remember this and hold Israel accountable for it. Are those the points that you're making?
Certainly. Well, basically, what Israel has been doing since the start of this operation, the genocide and ethnic cleansing, as I call it, basically is it has taken so extensive dimensions that no concept like moral high ground that the West has basically used for so many decades, on which they justify their regime change wars and so many other military actions and sanctions and what have you, they have all been thrown into the dustbin by Israel. Hmm. And the trouble is that the United States, that is the only country that can actually stop Israel from doing all this, is sort of watching it all happening.
Let me ask you. That's interesting you say that. Let me ask you a question. I think I know, living in America, why the United States does that. Why do you think they go along with it? Why do you think they don't hold them accountable? Why do you think they keep giving them more money and more weapons? As you're in Istanbul, you're in Turkey, you have a different perspective.
Well, yes. Well, basically, the perspective is that from the right beginning, Israel has been upheld. You know, it's been supported by the West in general and by the United States in particular. That is understandable, and that was understandable up to a certain point. But now the latest events, in which the United States seems to be acting helplessly as if it has no leverage over Israel, is beyond the pale. For instance, the United States can actually stop Israel, and it showed, it demonstrated its ability to stop Israel whenever it wanted in the past. For instance, during the Suez Crisis of 1956, when Israel basically invaded and occupied large chunks of Egyptian territories, the United States president basically called up the Israelis and said, you know, you will have to withdraw, just as I have warn the French and the British, basically, to get out of the occupied territories.
You're blaming it on Biden. You're saying this President Biden, is worse than past presidents. Did I hear you correctly?
Well, it's not maybe just like that, but the U.S., the Israeli lobby and the power of the Israeli lobby has grown incredibly big and incredibly, it has got incredibly powerful over the decades. But the trouble is, the United States governments and politicians and the U.S. political elite will have to think beyond what is happening. For instance, can you imagine a U.S. president or even a European prime minister or a president, lecturing their counterparts in one part of the world on democracy, on human rights, on freedom? in general and the moral high ground, people will immediately retort by saying, oh, you mean freedom, you know, all sorts of freedoms, freedom a la Gaza, democracy a la Gaza. Mm. Oh, we know it all. We know it all.
So, yeah, it's going to be, you know what, it reminds me of when I have a rock in my shoe that I carry with me no matter where I go. I'm always going to feel like I have that little pain in my foot because that rock is exactly in there. And Gaza is the rock that's going to be in the U.S.'s shoe for decades to come, and people will always point to it. Yeah, no, you're making a lot of sense in what you're saying. What's it like?
I think there's one other thing.
Go ahead.
There's another thing. With the latest, for instance, the Israeli defiance of the International Criminal Court and the Israeli defiance of international law in general, and the international and the United States compliance with the Israeli attitude is leading to a new situation in which the international organizations that the Western world basically built over the decades to support their superiority are also crumbling now.
Huh.
I mean, for instance, now several U.S. Political elites are saying, you know, we set up all those courts to prosecute the Africans and others, some rogue people like Putin and perhaps others. If it is going to get at Israeli politicians and the leaders, you know, forget about the courts, so we can basically get rid of them altogether.
What is the feeling? I know. I'm not going to put you in a position to speak for all of the Middle East or all the Arab countries. I just happen to know you are in that part of the world. So I just ask you, as a learned man, as a professor, as a writer, as someone whose material I read from time to time, what is your perspective on what this is doing, what effect it's having on the countries in that part of the world, in the Middle East, the Arab countries, Turkey, and all the other countries that surround it?
I think there are two layers to that, two dimensions to that. One is across the people, basically, and also the politicians these days. I read some pieces, you know, which leaked to the press some months back. The U.S. ambassadors across the Middle East were reporting back to Washington saying that there is no basically political class to which they can talk some sense about what is going on. They have, you know, what Israel has been doing has turned, has pissed off almost everybody in the Middle East. that is quite understandable. But there is also the other side of the coin. For instance, all this is happening at a time of multipolarity, when there are very powerful countries like China and Russia basically defying the unipolarity under the leadership of the United States. And those countries and very many other countries, the middle-sized countries like Turkey, like Middle Eastern countries, Africans, the Latin Americans and others, who are all happy to see the world basically turning into a multipolar one,
yes,
are watching the United States bogged down into a quagmire in the Middle East.
So that's interesting, because to a certain extent, then what you're saying is one of those countries, not to name anyone specifically, might be sitting back, especially some of the Arab countries, and going, this is great. I'm going to sit back and watch this show. I mean, it sounds horrible because people are dying, but what is happening is there's a message that's being sent that's a negative message both about Israel and about my country, the United States. And a lot of those countries are saying, finally, everything that we've been saying is right there now. As lawyers would say, prima facie, right? Right in front of your face. You're seeing it. And we're talking about Brazil and South Africa and Nigeria and Russia and China and Iran even. And Saudi Arabia, to a certain respect, which recently has come out on kind of that side. So, and where does Turkey sit in that list?
Turkey has joined the all the names you have mentioned. Basically, I think it is also made an application to the International Court of Justice about the genocide dossier against Israel, and it has cut off its trade altogether with Israel.
Huh.
So it has been on the side of the justice, if you like, and the people. I mean, it started out with a moderate approach to build some sort of equidistance to Israelis and to the Palestinians, and particularly the Arab countries. It tried to coordinate the efforts for a ceasefire of some sort or the other, but, you know, then it gave up in the end. Like many other countries have given up, because what we have seen lately in Rafah is the repetition of so many other carnage based that have taken place.
Final question. Did this shock you? I was kind of shocked myself. I don't know. I just expected after the ICC condemnation, after the charges against Netanyahu, after the UN report, after the statements made by the prime ministers of Israel and Norway and Ireland, after the statements made by the government of South Africa, I thought, you know what? There's so much pressure on these people. They're probably going to slow down a little bit. And then I see this. This is one of the worst attacks I've ever seen. This was a massacre. How did, were you as shocked as I was, this video that we're watching now?
Well, you know, all of us are shocked by what we've seen, by what is unfolding. It is incredible. It is intolerable. It is, you know, it can't go on like this. Okay, and Israel has made a, it has turned into a pariah state. And don't forget, this is happening at the time of multipolarity. In the end, you know, it won't take long when Israel will have to basically look around for anybody in the Middle East and across the world to talk to say something to, but it won't have anybody to talk to, let alone.
Yeah. Well, it's fascinating. And I know as we watch these pictures on the screen, these horrific pictures that we were seeing there just moments ago, it's amazing to watch that. And then not just, we're not in any way saying, by the way, that what Hamas did on October 7th is not something which we too would look at in an extremely unfavorable light, just as unfavorably as we see some of these horrific actions. But nonetheless, by comparison's sake, it looks very much like what Israel is doing has gone beyond the pale, as is often said at this point. We thank Professor Hassan for joining us and for sharing his insight on this. And we look to being able to have an opportunity to talk to you once again. That's our show. Remember to always look outside your own box. Truths don't live in boxes. I'm Rick Sanchez. See you again next time.